Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Gertniblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, Blake and I are going to take our first stab at a way too early mock draft for 2024-2025. Let's get it! And, of course, I have your friend and my best friend, the man no one could ever mistake for a fake. It's Mr. Blake Creamer. Blake, how are we feeling tonight?
Oh, thank you very much. You know, I take a lot of pride in being authentic, so I'm glad you noticed, buddy. You get me, all right? Man, I miss you, buddy. I miss doing this together. I mean, I've had a couple pods on my own, but there's nothing the same as this type of synergy, as this electricity. You know, we're so simpatico. You know, we finish each other's
sentences.
Yeah, we do that. You know what I'm saying? It's just you know, I set them up and you
knock them down.
Do stuff. Yeah, exactly. That's where we're at. That's how we get from A to B. But it's really good to see you, man. I was telling you, I worked today long hours and I was tired and but when I got home, I don't know, something happened. I just got jacked right the hell up, and it might have to do with a little team called the Vancouver Canucks playing one of the stinkiest games I've ever seen and somehow pulling out an overtime victory. So you got to love the playoffs sometimes. So sorry for your loss, my man. I didn't want to bring too much of this up because I'm a Leafs fan too, and I love the Leafs, and what the hell is going on? I don't know. Where are you at with this? Talk to me about the playoffs in general, Nate. And then if you want to talk some Leafs, you go ahead.
I mean, the playoffs in general has been pretty entertaining. I mean, what Colorado's doing in the absolute absence of any goaltending whatsoever is pretty impressive. I mean, we got Wyatt Johnston doing his thing. Yeah. I feel like Wyatt Johnston's becoming a brand player here at Apples and Genos over the past couple of years. So I'm happy to see that. Happy to get excited about what that can mean for his 2024-25 prospects as well. But I honestly don't want to talk about the Leafs. I'm so jaded, but it still hurts every single time. Like every single time I get to this time of year and I'm like, why do I allow this to hurt me so much on such a deep level? I don't understand why I think it'll be different every single year. But here we are. So that's what I have to say about that. Thankfully, we have something else to talk about, though. And what we are going to talk about, well, first, I'm going to throw it up on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to follow along with us. But this is last year's way too early mock draft. And Blake and I were looking at this before we got on. This first round is not bad. So we had Connor McDavid, Nathan MacKinnon, Austin Matthews, Leon Draisaitl, Nikita Kucherov, David Pastrnak, Mikko Rantanen. Matthew Tkachuk is probably the first name there that falls out of a first round in a lot of cases this year. Jack Hughes, who was on fire until he got injured. Kale McCarr, Kirill Kaprizov. And then we don't need to talk about Jason Robertson and Tage Thompson going at the turn there to my team. Yeah. But I feel like even if you just look at this as like an indication of what ADP was come September, I feel like we kind of nailed this, Blake. How are you feeling about our performance in this way too early from last year?
It feels good, but I remember the feeling after we did it. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. Like, this is an interesting exercise that we're doing here, right? Because yeah, there's so many things that can change, you know, from here or from this time to the beginning of the season, and different line combinations, different coaches, different players going to different teams. But yeah, it's nice to look at that first round and be like, yeah, I think we did something right there. And, you know, in defense of that, that's, 12 spot, I would have loved that team at the beginning of the year, right? Yeah. J-Rob, Tage, and Alex DeBrincat is your first three picks. Yes, please. And then you can pick up your first defenseman on the fourth pick. You're loving it. So that would have been a nice start that probably would have, you know, really crushed you during the season.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm lucky to have avoided some of those teams because I think I would have felt pretty similarly last year as well. But so much talk about last year. Let's see what we can get into for this upcoming season. Our way too early mock for 2024-2025. This will be based on the Kakufo point scoring system. I've got that down in the corner here. I'll read it out for the audio listeners. Goals, 4.5 points. An assist is worth 3. Shots on goal and blocks are both worth 0.5, and a hit is worth 0.25. Shorthanded points are worth 1. I would read out the goalie stats here, but I don't think either of us are going to be selecting a goalie in the first 3 rounds. Some little inkling is telling me that I don't think either of us are going to be doing that, unless you're going to tell me different here, Blake.
Don't put me in a box, all right? I need to be creative. I need to just go with the flow, so I don't know, you know, but that's fine.
All right. Well, I've ordered the players based on their points per game and Kakupful from last year on the screen here so that we have some sort of baseline to work off. Obviously, this isn't necessarily indicative of how they'll go in the draft here, but I am curious to see where you'll have them versus where I'll have them and what we can derive from our differences as well as the points we agree on. So, Blake, why don't you kick it off? You have the 101. Bring us in, start off the new year of fantasy hockey right here on April 28th. Let's have it.
Number one pick, Brock Besser. All right. Yeah. All right. Oh, buddy. Right. No, that perfect. I would never. Yeah. No, that's
let me copy
not,
it in here.
No, oh, that's a joke. All right. But we should be after this performance tonight. I'm sorry. All right. I think, you know, great season for Nathan MacKinnon. No question. I think that was peak MacKinnon to me. 140 mm-hmm. points. I don't think there's any headroom there. But someone who maybe has a bit more headroom than that, Connor McDavid. I think we got to go with Connor McDavid. It's still a no-brainer, even with this amazing season that MacKinnon just had.
Yeah, I think I agree there. I'm still going back to McDavid. McDavid had a bad season and was still the fourth best in points per game in this format. If he had started the season the way he finished it, the way he usually does, then yep. I think he would have been right there. So I'm pretty comfortable with McDavid 101. He's just going to be like, yeah, you'll have some years where somebody else outscores him, but he's easily going to be the most consistently at the top or near the top of this list every single year for the next probably decade. So Connor McDavid 101, I'm in agreement there. I will take MacKinnon here as the next pick. Yeah, I mean, it feels a little bit self-explanatory. Like, you look at the points per game from last year, 9.12 points per game for MacKinnon. The next highest, Matthews, at 8.39. It was not particularly close when it was all tallied up at the end. So, even if MacKinnon takes some significant regression, you still feel pretty good about him being a top three player at the very least, I think, in this format. So I'll take MacKinnon at 2 and be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, MacKinnon is just a cheat code. He's ridiculous. And when you're watching the playoffs here and you're like, get just these teams like Edmonton and Colorado that have guys like MacKinnon, McDavid, Drysdale, Makar, it's like, what do you do with that? I mean, if they want to, they will just go out and do damage. So, yeah, I love the season MacKinnon had here. All right. At number 3, I've got some really good options here. But if I know that you're picking after me, I think I'm going to have to go with Austin Matthews here at number 3. I mean, 69 goals. Nice. Nice. I'd love to see that 70. I don't want to chase a performance here, but I think he has some room to grow with his assist numbers. Obviously, that's not what he's known for. I think there's a little bit of headroom with his points. And I think 55, 60 goals is pretty much a lock if this guy's healthy. So, and with the goal scoring being 4.5 in this points league, I think, you know, Matthews is a dunk at 3.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment at this point. Like, even if he doesn't come back next year and he doesn't have, you know, 69 or 70 goals or whatever it is, I still think that when all is tallied up at the end, he's going to be top 5 probably.
He blocks too, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he does everything. He's going to be around it even if he doesn't have the best season in terms of shooting or anything altogether. So I do think that it's a fairly safe assumption to say that he's going to be right up there and he's a pretty safe pick at 3. I do think that there's a couple ways you can start to go after this. I think everybody is going to fawn over Nikita Kucherov for the season he just had, and rightfully so. I mean, it was a tremendous season. I do think there are some signs of unsustainability. He had a 15.2% on ice shooting percentage. He skated 21 minutes, 40 seconds a night, which is way higher than anything he's ever done in his career before. That definitely helped. 83% IPP, he's only done that once before in his career. It's just some higher end numbers that probably regress a bit. But again, it's a case where he's at 8.37 fantasy points per game in this format. The next highest, Pasternak at 7.53. He's providing you all that at right wing. I think Kucherov is probably the pick I would go here, although I wouldn't really fault someone for going a different way.
Yeah, I like that. I think, like, especially if Kakupfel had power play points as a scoring category as well, man, I might consider taking him over Matthews there, right? Like, this guy's, you know, one of the top three power play performers in the league. There's no question. So yeah, I think he redlined a lot too. And which is funny because last year he didn't, right? He had a great season last year, but his metrics were, you know, not where we are used to seeing him. So it's probably somewhere in between. All right. At number five. Yeah. It's still fun times here. We got some good pieces here. I think I'm going to go with, I think I have to go with Pasta for kind of the same reason that I went with Austin Matthews, right? Goals being at a premium here. And I love what Pasta was able to do this year with his assists. He became, he actually drove offense a little bit differently here. And his assists went up, which is a little bit of a surprise. So I like that. I think that is reasonably sustainable moving forward. And you just can't count the Bruins out of anything, right? They never regress ever. And that'll be till the end of time. Book it.
Yeah. I can't argue much with that there. The other guy that I would consider at that spot, and I'm not honestly sure which way I'd do it today, is Leon Draisaitl, who I will take here at six. Draisaitl obviously had just a down season overall. No two ways about it. He had the lowest shots per 60 of the last five seasons. He was down in ice time even from the last number of seasons, which might be something that you have some concern about continuing under the new coach, obviously, there. So that's something to consider for sure. The on-ice shooting percentage, I did call for it to regress somewhat in Edmonton. That definitely did hit, but it's still probably a case where even at 13.6% on-ice shooting percentage, like, that's probably the low end of the bar for Draisaitl and McDavid.
Yep.
So I think that's at the low end. I think his shooting percentage at 18.9 is the lowest shooting percentage he's had the last 3 years, which is unbelievable to even say. 69% IPP, while nice, is not as high as any of his previous seasons going all the way back to his rookie year. So I think there's definitely some more headroom for Draisaitl here. He gives you the center left wing eligibility consistently. I was never really into Draisaitl as the second overall pick in a lot of formats. I usually had MacKinnon and or Matthews ahead of him in each of the last couple of years. Was, I guess, finally proven right this year, perhaps. But I do think that he's still comfortably a top six pick in almost all formats.
Yeah, and imagine that too. Like, that sounds crazy to hear. Like, I got Draisaitl at six. It's like, sheesh. Yeah. Okay. And again, Kakupfel doesn't have power play points. Otherwise, this guy's rocketing up the charts there, right? Because of his amazing power play there in Edmonton. So yeah, I love that pick at six. I'd get Draisaitl at six. That's a great way to start your team. All right, number seven. I think I'm going to go with probably a player that I think is one of the safest in the first round, and that's Mikko Rantanen. It's a guy I never really get any of because it's not sexy to me. I don't know. But if he was on any other team without MacKinnon, this guy is much more, his profile is much higher. But I think Rantanen actually had not a down season because he was 1 point off his career high, right? He had 104 points in 80 games, but his shooting percentage went down a little bit from the year previous. He's a career 16.1 shooter, shot just under that. So I think there could be a little bit of room there. So I think a 50 goal season is probably in the wheelhouse for Rantanen next year. And he's got access, obviously, to the wagon that is the Colorado Avalanche and all their great players. So I think I'm going Rantanen. I like the right wing as well. It's kind of nice to start off with the right wing because that's a scarce position.
For sure. Yeah, I think Rantanen kind of starts the next tier for me. I can see it a few different ways. Being a right wing kind of gives him that edge. If you played fantasy hockey this past year, you absolutely know how scarce right wing is to fill out. So getting that right at the top when it's all just kind of a big tier, feels pretty good to just cement that in your lineup right here. So I agree, it's not maybe the sexiest pick, but Rantanen has shown the ability to be here. He's shown the ability to do this without McKinnon in the lineup. Obviously, he benefits from McKinnon, but even without McKinnon around, he'll probably end up just playing like 25 minutes a night when McKinnon's out and carrying the offense himself. He is fully capable of doing that. So don't mind that pick at all. I'm going to go with my guy Kirill Kaprizov here.
Ooh, I love it.
Yeah, I don't know if this one will be a spicy take. I really don't think it should be, to be honest with you. Like, Kaprizov had kind of a worst case scenario for a good chunk of the season and still ended up showing up, what is this, 8th in fantasy points per game in the Kakuffle setup here. 21 minutes, 32 seconds average time on ice last year, the lowest IPP of his career, his 4-year career in the NHL so far, and by a fair margin. The shots per 60 were down a little bit this year. I think that was a little bit of product of the kind of mess of the lineup that the Wild had going in the early part of the season. Definitely they figured it out later on. His on-ice numbers were the best of his career. Boldy oncoming is helping raise that floor a little bit for me as well. I honestly feel the most solid with Kaprizov over anybody else left on the board right now. And so that's where I'll go here.
Yeah, he chugs minutes too. Like, he's the guy. I love Kaprizov there. It doesn't feel weird to me at 8 at all. He was going mid second round last year, or like, yeah, beginning, like early second round, mid second round. That was ridiculous and looked like it made sense until he started popping off there in the second half. So, okay. So I've got 9th overall here. I think I got to go with Matt Tkachuk. That's where I want to roll here. I really feel like Matt Tkachuk was so hampered by the injury that he had in the playoffs last year that he broke his sternum, right? And this guy was a buy low pretty much for the first half of the season. His shooting percentage this year, 9.3%. That's terrible, right? This guy's a career 12.6 shooter, and he's a shot monster. He's amazing on the power play. He only got 6 goals on the power play this year. That's ridiculous, right? I mean, it's the same old story, you know, with the Panthers there, like everybody besides Sam Reinhart, right? Like, they're mega shots, mega chances, and the conversion wasn't that great. But I do think Tkachuk has so much more in the tank. 91-point pace this year. I could see him as a 100-point player like we expected this season here going into next season. So unless he gets injured, I'm going with Matty Tkachuk.
Right. Yeah. Again, I don't mind it. You're getting the right wing eligibility. You're getting dual eligibility there, which is always a big factor as well. I still have a couple guys that I prefer personally, so we'll see how many of those I get to take here. But yeah, it's hard to argue with what Matthew Tkachuk's been able to do the last little bit. Tkachuk, sorry, I know I've been chastised by the online commenters for my pronunciation, but the
T is silent, Nate.
Yeah, the reduction in the time on ice is a little bit concerning to me, down to 1838 this year, where he's at 2026 in the big year there for Florida. So that's the biggest concern for me. I don't have any concerns about the player, the talent here. On ice shooting percentage was in line with the previous year. It was really the shooting percentage dipping down to 9.3% that really sunk his season, and then the extra kind of decrease in the time on ice. Everything else kind of held true. So I don't really see anything coming through next year except some more goals, hopefully. So I think that should probably boost him up, and he's definitely worth a first round pick. I just have a couple other guys that I might prefer in this range, one of whom would be Jack Hughes.
Oh,
who will be my pick here? I thought that might be a snipe for you there. Center left wing eligibility here. I think everybody, if they can dig back in their mind, can remember the start to the season that Jack Hughes had before getting injured. I know the injury prone bros are going to come at me here and say that there's no way this guy can stay healthy, even though literally the previous season he had 78 games played. Yeah, I just think Jack Hughes, when healthy, is dynamite, and he's not going to shoot 9.9% again. So I think that you're looking at a guy who will probably outperform this ADP, in my estimation, if this is where he ends up. And I honestly think there's a good chance that he goes even later than this. But that's my take on Jack Hughes. Sounds like I sniped you, Blake. How are you feeling about him?
Yeah, no, that's a snipe for sure. I mean, I would love to take him sooner. I think you could take Jack Hughes at 7. I mean, you know, that might be spicy too, right? But that's risky bisky, right? Because of what happened last year and how the Devils really kind of unfolded throughout their season. But I mean, yeah, to me, we know what he does, right? Shot generation, chance generation, and he's probably the best rush player in the league. So I love that stuff. Just stay healthy, my man, please. Okay. At pick 11, oh God, I don't know. I've got a couple things in the wheelhouse here. I think if I want this player, I'm going to have to go get him right now. And I'm going to take Cale Makar because I like Cale Makar in the first round. I don't even care. To me, value over replacement, that's a thing. This guy is clearly the best defenseman in the league. I know Quinn Hughes should and hopefully win the Norris this year, but he just doesn't do what Makar does to the same consistency, right? Like, this guy had a 90-point season in his own right this year. So, and he's on an amazing offensive team, and to me, he's head and shoulders above the rest of the pack. So I'm going with Makar.
Yeah, I love that pick. He was definitely my next player off the board here. Even with a step back in ice time this year, still produced an absolutely elite clip, increased his IPP. A lot of people might have thought that the 58% IPP last year was too high. Now Cale Makar goes up to 60% this year.
He does that.
The last 3 years, shooting percentage has been 11.7, 9.7, and this year, the low year at 9.1%. So he's an absolutely elite converter. Highest individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 of his career this year. Like, what did Cale Makar not do this year? Definitely one of, like, pacing to be a Hall of Fame defenseman at this point through 5 seasons for Cale Makar. So, played 77 games. I know people want to talk about Cale Makar as an injury risk, but he played 77 games. He was apparently nicked up for some of this. So just imagine what he could have been if he was fully healthy all year. I got nothing much more to say about Cale Makar, except actually I will say, just looking at the fantasy points per game in this format, 6.6. Next up, Roman Josi, 6.26, and then all the way down to Bouchard at 5.59. Aside from Josi, a full point per game better in this format than any other defenseman. Just ridiculous stuff from Makar. So definitely does that, fills out a lot of categories, does a lot of good stuff for you. Cale Makar, absolutely worth a first-round pick and potentially even higher in my estimation. This leaves me with a pretty difficult choice, quite honestly. There was a bunch of different players I thought about here. It starts a new tier, basically, I guess, is what I would say. And at this point, I think you can talk yourself into maybe a half a dozen names. The player that I am going to take here and feels a bit spicy still, but I am going to take Philip Forsberg here.
First round Philip Forsberg. I love it.
It is maybe a little bit hard to get behind just having such a huge single season, but I mean, the way he did it looks pretty good. Like 13.4 shots per 60, absolutely electric stuff. 72% IPP, it's high, but it's in line with stuff he's done before. It's definitely not excessive. He just like upped everything else that he was doing. Definitely, I think he probably takes a step back in efficiency next year. But again, he got up to almost 19 minutes a night. That's the highest of his career. I don't see... Oh, no. There was actually one season way back in 2015, 2016, where he actually had a couple more seconds a night. But regardless, definitely the best season of his career. The on-ice numbers were up there, too. So clearly, it's a bit of a coaching thing, the new players there, Nyquist and O'Reilly, really meshing well with him. You have Josi driving the bus from the back end, obviously really helping things out there, too. Yeah, it feels a little rich for Forsberg for sure, but I'm not going to be mad whoever you take in this range, to be quite honest. Like I said, I think there's a half dozen names you could take at 12, and I'd feel pretty comfortable with them.
You got another right. one. Oh, my.
Oh, yeah. What am I thinking here? I was thinking I was going to kick it to you, but yeah, we are wrapping this around. We're doing the snake draft as we do, so I got to take a second guy here, which makes this exercise all the more difficult. Why don't I just go ahead? I'm going to do it. I'm going to take my guy, Roman Josi. I'm going to get the stack right here.
Baby.
Just line them up. Yeah, we'll go with both of these guys here. Roman Josi, like I said before, clear separator from the rest of the defensemen in this format. I know he's getting older, but like another absolutely ridiculous season from Roman Josi. It seems like nobody's talking about it. But yeah, he's a separator at defense. Absolutely worth this pick, in my opinion. I think just the fact that there are a bunch of these other players, these other forwards in this range, that I feel a little bit less certain are going to separate in the same way from the rest of the groups of forwards. I feel like I take that separation with Josi. I call it a day, and then I'll come back at the next place, the end of the third round and start of the fourth, and I'll find some guys there that I feel pretty comfortable with at the forward realm, and I can get my separation from the pack here with Roman Josi and feel pretty confident in that. I should mention here as well, so because we are kind of doing this as a snake, we will kind of take into consideration, you know, we are trying to build a team here the way we would in a real draft. So we're not just going to draft like three center only guys in the first three picks here and call it a day. We're going to actually try to pretend to build at least the first three rounds of a team here. So now I can finally flip it back to you, Blake, after pausing on my own team there. Who are you going to add to Cale Makar with Team 11?
You were deep in thought, buddy, and I'm here for it. You know what? This is getting my juices flowing, buddy. I love drafting. Like, this kind of feels like, you know, we're doing stuff.
We're doing
here.
The thing.
Yeah, we are doing the thing. All right, so I've got Cale Makar. I love that, and I can't let this man sit here any longer. This does feel a bit strange, like, but Artemi Panarin, I think I got to go with Panarin. It feels a little bit like chasing a performance, but, you know, I really do think that he's made a step here in his, just in the way that he plays. And I think the coaching change there in New York made a big difference. I think his line made a big difference. He's there with Trocheck and Lafreniere, which was a great line all season. I mean, the way that he's upped his shots, like 2.5 shots per game last year, 3.7 this year. That's huge. And then he's always good on the power play, like career high power play points this year, 44 points, big ice time. He looks electric out there. I think I could see him going in the first round this year based on what he did last year, but I don't want to take him in the first round. And even this feels a little bit high for me, but he's left wing. Like, I like the left wing eligibility there. I feel like him and Cale Makar, like, points are going my way. I think that's a great start.
For sure. Yeah, I do agree that Panarin probably, like, we've probably seen his best season as a pro now. It would be very, very difficult for me to envision Panarin repeating this season for a variety of reasons. I've seen this kind of performance in the past where there's just a random uptick in shots per 60 in the individual metrics, and usually it's followed by a bit of a regression. Sometimes it's, especially for a player of this level of being a veteran in the league, right? It's just so unusual for a guy in his ninth season to just take another step and go from literally like averaging somewhere in like the range of 7.5 to 8 shots per 60 to go up to 11 shots per 60 this year. I feel like that's probably regressing. I'm going to probably have to do some specific studies around on some players who did similar things just to try to figure out what to do with Panarin projection wise for next year. Just because the difference is so vast. But I do think like the IPP at 80%, you think that's super high. He's done that 3 out of the past 4 years now, and the year in between was at 75%. So that's absolutely something Panarin does. The on-ice numbers were the best of his career this past year. Probably a slight regression just because it's so difficult to perform at that elite level year after year after year. But I mean, a lot of this is fairly repeatable. I don't think we need to be scared of Panarin's production. It's just a case where you may not get that kind of elite level shot in goal production out of Panarin next year that you did this year. So you just need to be a little bit cognizant of that. I think taking him in the second round here, even in the early part of the second round, is totally taking that into account in a reasonable way and expecting what we probably should expect from him moving forward. He was the next highest player on my list. So yeah, I would have taken him if you didn't.
Lovely.
All right, so let's keep rolling. I think the next guy that I'm going to have to take here is Brady Tkachuk. I said it intentionally slowly so I could get that pronunciation right for everybody there. Brady Tkachuk, I just feel like he's so dependable here. I just feel like I know what I'm getting out of him. I know I'm getting second round value out of Brady Tkachuk. And I don't really have to think about it. I've got two center left wings in Jack Hughes and Brady Tkachuk. So I got one center, one left wing. Feel okay with that in this team. But I feel like I've got a really high floor with Brady Tkachuk, which is something I really want. And I'm really valuing more and more as my seasons progress in fantasy hockey is floor out of my top end picks, my top three picks, four picks, five picks, all these guys. I want guys where their worst case scenario is really not that bad. So Brady Tkachuk, I think it fits that bill completely. He was drafted in the first round in a lot of places last year, didn't quite fulfill on all that promise, but I feel like even though he didn't, like, he still finished 12th in fantasy points per game in Kakuffle last year, and I feel like people were moderately disappointed with that season. So I'll be pretty happy to take him here at the 202 if that's where I can get him next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's got a lot more room on the power play. Like, he had a poor for him power play year, right? So I think there's a little headroom there. This guy should be a point per game player floor, I think. So I do think he did have a down year, but he makes up for it with all his per riffs, ridiculous stuff. So great pick there. I was going to go him or my next guy here. I got to take JT Miller. I think, you know, and this season, again, these picks feel weird when you're picking a guy at his ceiling, and Panarin was a ceiling pick and Miller is a ceiling pick. He doesn't have anywhere to go. That said, the floor, like I was talking about Miller in my last pod, like his season before this was something like 83 points. And this last one was 100 and whatever. So those are goalposts to me. It's somewhere in the middle. And that's probably where Miller lives. And I'm fine with that as my, you know, my second pick. And I got Matthew Tkachuk as my first pick. Like, I'm good positionally here. You know, Miller's center, right wing, Tkachuk is left wing, right wing. So I'm liking that. And Miller is just, he's just really good. Like, he's an amazing power play performer. And he's really shown that here in the playoffs too. Like, he's just had a great year, and I think he knows his role on this team, and he's playing well under Tocchet. So I feel confident that he'll be able to put up minimum point per game. And that's, again, to your point, like, a great floor with JT Miller.
Yeah, hard to argue with JT Miller in the second round after the season he just had. I do think, like you said, that you're paying for a bit of the ceiling season that he had. But again, we're kind of into a tier here now where I feel like there's not a lot of obvious picks that you have to make, and you can definitely go do worse than getting somebody who's gonna skate, like, 21 minutes a night,
big minutes
for a very offensively talented team, and you feel like the floor there is pretty solid. So really don't mind that for JT Miller there. He was definitely in contention for this next pick for me as well. As for myself, it is really tough. I am still debating it, quite honestly. There's, again, probably half a dozen ways I feel like this can go. I think I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, and I am going to prioritize defense. I'm going to take Evan Bouchard here.
Nice.
It feels a bit rich to take a guy up here, but I just feel like, again, they're kind of honed in on this guy as the power play guy there. He clearly fit in perfectly. One of the concerns I had with Bouchard was that everybody was saying that everything would work out perfectly. He would skate a ton of minutes. He would be the top power play guy all year. And I wasn't quite ready to go there 100%, but he absolutely was. He fulfilled all that. Feels like the floor here is pretty solid for Bouchard. Obviously, being attached to McDavid and Draisaitl, and both those guys probably had down years last year, like, it's not hard to envision that there might even be more ceiling for Evan Bouchard than what he put up last year. So I think that Bouchard in the middle of the second makes some sense. I pair him with Kirill Kaprizov out of this eight slot here, and I'm feeling pretty good about those two picks.
Oof. Okay. You got me thinking here, buddy. I had a pick, and then I kind of looked up some of the metrics here, and I'm not loving that. Oh God. You know what? Let's just roll with it. Who are we doing here? Okay. So we got Mikko Rantanen. So Old Faithful, we got a safe pick there. You know what? I think I do want to take a ride here and see what's what. I'm going to go with Zach Hyman.
All right.
My pick there. you know, I love the chemistry he has with Connor McDavid. That is clear. And this guy, again, it feels like another ceiling pick in a way, right? Certainly in terms of goal production. Like, he had a massive year. There's no question. I don't think he's getting more than 54 goals ever again. You know, maybe won't even touch 50 again. But I think 40 is well in the wheelhouse there. And his assist numbers were really low. Like, he had 23 last year. He had 47 the year before. So this great season Hyman had, he had less points than he did the year before. So I think the shooting percentage will probably go down a little bit. The on-ice shooting percentage is probably going to go up. So to me, I just like the scoring chances too. Oh my God. Like Hyman scoring chances on the season. What are we looking at here? I had it. Oh yeah. Fifth overall in individual scoring chances per 60. Fifth, Zach Hyman. I mean, thank you very much. 24th overall in shots and goal per 60. So it's exactly what we like. It's in the wheelhouse. He plays with McDavid. What's not to like? Dual eligibility. Book it.
Yeah, it's hard to say there's a really big reason to discount what Hyman's doing. Again, like you make the same argument I made for Bouchard. McDavid and Draisaitl both down years, and Hyman's still producing like a middle-of-the-second-round stud. I am going to go back to D on this one. I do think that Rasmus Dahlin has all the earmarks of a difference-making defenseman. And to pair him with Leon Draisaitl feels pretty good. For Dahlin to put up the kind of season that he did outside of, you know, Buffalo really having a decent year at any other position. Like, we all know the struggles of Tage Thompson. We all know, you know, Jeff Skinner got demoted down the lineup after having a terrific year the year before. Like, for all those things, it feels like Rasmus Dahlin was still just being same old Rasmus Dahlin. 59 points in 81 games for him. Took 235 shots. Definitely a big time shooter from the back end, which helps in this format. 6.85 shots per 60, which is really good stuff from a defenseman. Overall, I just feel like Dahlin is that dude on the back end, and I feel really comfortable with him as a mid-second round pick, as a guy who, is going to lead up the next tier of defensemen alongside Evan Bouchard in a lot of cases.
Nice. Yeah. I'm all aboard that. I love Rasmus Dahlin. He was going at like the beginning of the third round last year, I think. He was kind of around the end of the second. So, I mean, and I think he had a down season. Obviously Buffalo as a team did. So I think it's aces up for Dahlin. I think that Buffalo power play is going to be a lot better for sure. All right. So my team here, coming back to me, I have David Pastrnak as my first pick. So, what the hell am I going to do? Oh my God. Decisions. Pasta, you know what? I'm just staring him right in the face. I think I got to go Jack Eichel here. He's center only. That's fine. Like, this is Jack Eichel's another player I don't usually get shares in because he's center only. And like, he hasn't really popped, right? He had that one year where they're like, he's just as good as Matthews. And then it never happened again. Right. But if you look at some of the underlying metrics that he was able to achieve here in this season, like, he only played 63 games, got 68 points. That's nice. But 10th overall in shots and goal per 60, 33rd overall in shot attempts per 60. Really nice. So he's chucking pucks with the best of them. Right. And then, I just think that because of those missed games that Eichel had, he could be being devalued a little bit. Like, I don't think we've seen, or we haven't seen what Jack Eichel is really capable of. And these shot numbers, rate stats, they give me a lot of security. So I'm happy with Jack Eichel there. He's getting power play one, all the stuff. He's getting all the minutes. So I think it's pretty solid there.
Yeah, I think that's a player that I was looking at too, for sure. I think the biggest thing for me, 20 minutes, 31 seconds average time on ice this past year. That's significantly up from 1846 and 1923, the 2 years prior. If he's going to be a 20 and a half, 21 minute player instead of the lower marks that he had been before, then absolutely, I think that Eichel can replicate this kind of performance and be well worth a mid-second pick. The one concern that I have is now Tomas Hertl comes to town, and they actually have some decent depth at center. They still have William Karlsson as well. Do they decide to do the Vegas thing and split up the lines a little bit more and just spread it out more
probably
than they have in the past? I feel like it might even be the most likely scenario. But hard to argue his best shots per 60 mark of his career this past season. I think that looks pretty solid. Still, like, even reaching these heights, he's still only shot 11.2%. So you have to feel like that's pretty good. 11.2 on ice shooting percentage as well. That's not super high. The 75.5% IPP is on the high end for him, but it's not outlandish compared to where he usually sits. He's usually in the low 70s. So overall, the biggest concern for me with taking Eichel here is not that he's the bottom's going to fall out. It's just that he might get a little bit less ice time than this past year, and that might just kind of limit his upside a little bit. All right, the next pick for me is going to be paired with my fourth overall pick of Nikita Kucherov. I feel like there's a lot of variance with a lot of these picks here. I'm not going to name names so I don't tip anything here, but I think the one that makes a lot of sense just to pair here, I feel like I got to go with Sidney Crosby, given the season he had. It just feels like written in stone that Crosby's going to be around this value, even as, what is he now, 37? Crosby doesn't care how old he is. He is an absolute Hall of Fame, probably top five player all time, still performing like it in his late 30s here. I think, yeah, for a team with a right wing already in Kucherov, to get Crosby here, that feels pretty good. He was staring me in the face. I feel like he's, again, this is kind of a bit more of a floor play than perhaps a ceiling play with some of the other guys that could be going in this spot. But I feel really good to lock up what I feel is just bankable production with Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, I love it. And he has so much to play for. You can tell that they're jazzed to get going again here. And I think with Erik Karlsson there, they're going to have a better season. That power play was terrible, as we all know. They're going to figure it out. And Crosby had an amazing year, even though the power play was terrible. So, yeah, like you said, floor play, but it could be we could be seeing another ceiling play as well. This guy's ageless. He's amazing. I don't think we're going to see like an Ovechkin situation with Crosby next year. Okay, so this right here, I'm going to be pairing up a player with Austin Matthews, who I picked at third overall. And I think I got to go with the stacker. Make way for Willie. I'm going to take Big Willie style. I like that. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too much into it here, but I don't know. Mariners days might be numbered there. I don't know. There's a lot of talk. Where there's smoke, there's not always going to be fire, right? But I don't know. If the Leafs go out the way that they're going to go out, I could see them moving on from Marner, maybe. So that would just mean more touches for Willie Nylander, who really doesn't need him anyway. This guy popped for 98 points in 82 games. He's played in the last three seasons. He's missed one game in 83 in the last three seasons. Sorry. Very, very consistent shot percentage, reasonable, right? It was a little bit down from last year, so maybe he can go up there. Shots on goal per 60, blast off time. Love it. And more minutes too. So I'm excited about Willie. I like the dual eligibility and he's got the new contract. So I feel good about that. And I love stacking him with Matthews.
Yeah, I feel that's a pretty good spot there. Yeah, the stack feels kind of nice too. The IPP on the higher side of what he's done in his career, but they definitely intentionally prioritized him more, especially on the power play. They actually kind of made him the number one feature on the power play, even with Matthews there, which is, I mean, you can debate whether that's a good tactic or not, but the Toronto power play was pretty highly ranked on the season, so it seemed to work out. Yeah, overall, it's hard to see how this goes terribly unless there is like a new coaching situation and the new coach doesn't like Nylander and kind of deprioritizes him, takes away some of this 20 minutes a night that he was seeing this year. That's really the only situation I see in which this goes sour. I feel like Nylander the last couple of years here has kind of established a new high for himself. Honestly, has kind of continually improved. Like if you go back through his metrics throughout the years, has really shown like an upward trajectory even into his, I don't even know how old he is anymore, but the mid to late 20s where he's at now. I have a lot of respect for William Nylander and what he's done over the past few years and feels like he is pretty locked in. They gave him the contract this year. If one of the core four or anybody really with a big contract is moved in Toronto, I don't think it's going to be Nylander after this season. So I think that that's a good spot to be in with Willie Nylander at the back end of the second. For myself, I know it's probably not a popular pick with the way that he's played this year. For Leaf fans, but I will go Mitch Marner here. I think this is the latest Mitch Marner has gone
great value
in the last few years. I just feel like there's every chance that he has a bounce back season next year, even if he's not on the Leafs. Like, if he goes somewhere and he's a feature guy there, like, it wouldn't shock me at all if he just has a big time bounce back season, has a try to prove the haters wrong kind of season. Well within the wheelhouse, pair him up with Nathan MacKinnon there, feeling pretty good about the point production coming out of those two. So I'll kick it to you, Blake. You got two here on the turn to pair with Connor McDavid.
Yeah, I'm looking at, I want to get a defenseman here, because obviously it's when you're at number one or number 12, you got to reach a little bit to get, you know, some of your players, because it's not coming back to you for a long time. So I'm definitely going to pick a defenseman in one of my two picks here, but I think what I'd like to do, should I dare. Okay, you know what? I'm going to take big Tage Thompson. All right, I'm taking Tage with my second pick there to pair with Connor McDavid. I'm expecting, obviously, a big bounce back here. You know, I don't know if I would do this in my actual league, you know, against like a bunch of killers, but, you know, for this exercise, I think I like that. I got right wing eligibility there with Tage to pair with Connor McDavid, who's center only, so that's fine. And then for my defenseman, I'm gonna take Quinn Hughes. I think I love what I saw this year, increase in shot production. I think, you know, a version of that is here to stay. I don't think he's gonna go back to just, you know, dinking around like, you know, 4 goals and 70 assists or something like that. I don't think that's gonna happen. I think this could be a double digit goal guy perennially, and, you know, 80 points, 70 to 80 points. I like that for Quinn Hughes. He's a different player now that he's captain here, and he's just so good. I mean, the way he moves the puck out of the D zone, the way he carries in with possession, the way he sets up chances, like, I mean, he's comparable to Makar, right? He has a completely different profile, but I mean, he's one of, if not the best at that, in my opinion. So I'm taking Quinn Hughes, and I'm taking it to the bank.
All right. Loved confidence. Yeah, I don't know if I can get on board with either pick at this point, to be honest. It's a lot of projection with Tage. I'd love Tage Thompson, to be clear. I think that this last year was a complete aberration. You saw him heat up at the end of the year, probably once the underlying injuries were starting to get cleaned up. Mm-hmm. So absolutely love the player. I do think he has the ceiling for sure, and probably more beyond it. I've been on record as saying that Tage Thompson has 100-point ceiling. Still believe that 100%. No question in my mind there. But whether he hits that ceiling is obviously another question entirely, and we'll have to see. It's definitely far from out of the question. You know, you got Lindy Ruff coming in there as the new coach. What does that do? Is he a Lindy Ruff player? Is Lindy Ruff going to identify him as the guy to lead the pack there and play him?
He's the next Jack Hughes. All right. That's what's going on. All right.
I mean, if he gives him the Jack Hughes treatment and plays him 21 minutes a night, then I think this is a low pick for Tage Thompson, to be quite honest. But yeah, still to be seen. And so there is some risk there, which is the main thing holding me back from Tage Thompson at this point. I think there are a lot of really interesting picks. This is where it really starts to open up in my mind in the third round. You can go a lot of ways. You can convince me of a lot of different routes to go with these picks, and it would be hard for me to really say that you're wrong about them. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm just going to do it. Sam Reinhart, been staring at us in the face. I know what the shooting percentage is. Nobody needs to remind me that he shot 25% this past season. But Sam Reinhart, I really do think that they found something that worked there, especially on the power play, him in the bumper spot, Barkov just feeding him relentlessly all year long. That was a high percentage play for them all year. I don't think, like, nobody figured it out the entire year. Nobody figured it out with Sam Reinhart. I don't think that they're going to figure it out next year. So I do think that Sam Reinhart actually has a pretty solid floor at this point. He's kind of established himself as a central piece of that Florida team and the power play at large. So I think that Sam Reinhart actually has a pretty solid floor. Do I think he's going to have the season he had last year? Absolutely not. But do I think that he has ensconced himself as a really central member of a really high-scoring team? Absolutely, I do. So Sam Reinhart.
I like that.
Yeah, you like that, eh?
I do.
gives me another right wing as well. So I pair this up with Nathan McKinnon, Mitch Marner. I've gotten two right wing slots taken care of in the first three rounds. That feels really good as well. Another reason to pick Sam Reinhart out of kind of the morass of players in this realm.
Oh man. Yeah, it is getting a little dicey here. This is where I like to have my projections because I'm like, oh, yeah. next guy up. Oh, I can make a quick decision. Now I'm like, oh God. So this is Austin Matthews, Willie Nylander. So, I mean, it would probably behoove me to take a defenseman here, but I don't really like the value, to be honest. So I don't know. I'm thinking I'm going to go forward here to pair up with these studs. And God, I'm looking at this. There's a couple of guys I'm interested in. I think I want to try and go back to the well with Jason Robertson. Mm-hmm. I want to see, like, you know, had a down year, obviously, like went from 109 points last year to 80 points this year. And again, like he didn't shoot as much. He shot a lot less, to be honest. He was prioritized a lot less because Dallas has an amazing middle six. Right. And, you know, they were popping off. Right. But what happens this year with Robertson? Like Pavelski, we'll see what he does in the offseason. But if he doesn't sign or if he does and maybe they minimize him, does Robertson get to play with Wyatt Johnston? Like, you know, is that what's going on? Like, to be honest, I haven't looked at the lines in the playoffs here. So is he playing with him right now? That's actually a good question.
I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it was Heinz, so, Robertson, Wyatt Johnson, top line.
So hell yes then. Okay, I'm loving that then. Because I just think Wyatt Johnson is such a stud. And obviously that's a guy that Nate and I are going to be, you know, really bullish on going into the season quietly, hopefully, you know, so no one steals him from us. But yeah, I like Robertson a lot. He had a down year with his shooting percentage. I think that bounces back. He had a down year in his power play production. I think that bounces back. I'd like to see more ice time. That would be the only thing that's concerning to me with Robertson, and obviously the downturn in his shot production, but I think that's coming back as well. So yeah, I feel good about this. And at this value, third round J-Rob, that's probably where he should have went this year and we would have felt good about it.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense to me. I can definitely see a scenario in which Dallas is a little bit more top heavy. Clearly one of the teams that loves to spread their lines out. But, you know, Seguin is getting older. Duchesne is getting older. Pavelski is definitely getting up there. Jamie Benn is getting up there. You could definitely see a scenario in which the Stars have to rely on some of their younger guys a little bit more. I don't think you're going to suddenly see 20-minute a night Jason Robertson, but you could definitely see 19-minute a night Jason Robertson again, and that wouldn't surprise me at all. And just that little bit of an extra tick could elevate him in this status here and put him back in that conversation where he was the previous year. So.
Yep.
Definitely don't mind the take here, taking the swing on a guy who's already shown a ton of production at the NHL level. For myself, there are a few guys that I'm interested in here. It's hard to talk about who I'm thinking about without tipping any future picks here. But there's definitely some guys who have gone higher in previous years that are interesting. There are some guys who I think could take a step next year, who could definitely warrant this kind of level here. But overall, I think I'm going to round out my forward line here. Kucherov, Crosby. I'm going to reunite Crosby with Jake Guentzel here. I don't know what's going to happen with Guentzel in the offseason here. I don't think there's been an update. At least I haven't seen one. Perhaps I'm missing out on that. But I think that if Jake Guentzel, look at how good it's gone for Jake Guentzel in Carolina. Amazing. Like, they got to be moving heaven and earth to try to keep Jake Guentzel in Carolina. And if he does stay, then that's obviously a terrific spot for him. If not, he's going to get paid to be a star player somewhere else, and he's going to get 20-plus minutes a night somewhere else. So I feel like regardless, you're coming up aces with Jake Guentzel. Jake Guentzel's just been one of the most bankable third-round players of all time, it feels like, the last, three, four seasons. So I just feel like, again, maybe not the sexiest team here with Crosby and Guentzel the last two picks, but I'm feeling really good about my floor with these guys. I feel like this team, I just need to fill in around the edges, and the Stars here are going to carry and do what they need to do to get me to the dance.
Okay. I like that. Yeah, Gensel, it's a little bit risky-bisky to me because we don't know where he's going. But, I mean, clearly the acumen of the player, his ability to just step in and start to dominate. Like, he's a perennial second-rounder, and he has been for his whole career. So I like the pick. I think he's going to probably smash wherever he lands. Oh, God. Yeah, these are all a little bit risky-bisky, especially with our knowledge of what's going on with these players right now. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But there's a couple guys I'm super interested in, but it's hard to justify this early. So we'll see. Let me look. All right, let's just do it. I've got my two guys here. I'm going to do it. All right, I'm going to take Timmy Stoops. Timmy right. Stoops in the third round. I like that. You know, I read reports or saw the year-end interview with Timmy Stoops. The guy was dealing with a shoulder injury all season, right? All season. So, I mean, take that for what you will, like the value of that. But to me, I think this guy has so much more to give. I like the offensive situation in Ottawa. Obviously, they need to get their coaching sorted out. Like, this guy shot 17.1% last year, 9.4% this year. No. All right. That is the outlier to me. I mean, yeah, 17 is probably too high, but 9.4 is way too low, right? This guy chugs minutes. He gets a ton. You know, and the only guy fighting him for minutes is the Pinto Bean. So we don't have to worry about that. All right. Thank you for your service, Shane Pinto. But yeah, 70 points in 75 games. I see Stoots probably as an 80 to 85 point player next season. And I feel good about that. Probably with better power play numbers too. This guy got one goal on the power play. No, that will regress positively. And he's saying he was injured. I believe it. I think we're looking at a better season for Timmy Stoots. And he bangs. He does that.
He definitely does. Happy you went off the board there for myself. That is an interesting trio, though, for sure. Pasternak, Eichel, Stützle on that team. But, yeah, I'm happy to take my guy here. That's going to be Alexander Barkov. I'm going to add him to Leon Draisaitl, add him to Rasmus Dahlin. I'm going to feel really good about that. Yeah, overall, I just think Barkov, like, probably, honestly, had a low-key down season. Played a little bit less minutes this year, was a little banged up at times. Perhaps that contributed to it. Even if it did, like, I feel like he's in this range regardless. And if he plays more minutes again, if the shooting percentage bounces back his way, I feel like there's a lot of outs to Barkov being a second-round value here in the third round. So I'm loving that. Yep. Loving to pair him with Draisaitl and Dahlin in the middle of the third.
All right. Yeah, no, I love that too. I mean, I would have went Barkov, but he's center only. So to me, it's like I already had Eichel. So I was looking a different way. But, you know, that's how I get from A to B. All right. Okay. I gotta get focused here. All right. So this is my team with Rantanen and Zach Hyman. So I got to see what I'm doing here. Again, I'd like to go defense here, but I don't know. There's so many question marks on defense. Like you got a guy like Dougie Hamilton, who one of us is going to pick for sure. And I love Dougie Hamilton, but is he even on power play one? We don't know. You know, like, that's risky bisky. I mean, that'd be a player I'd be all over. But, you know, I think I'm going to probably stick safe and go with a forward and get the guaranteed production here. So let me have a look. You know what? I think I'm going to stick with, again, a guy that I feel pretty confident in. He's a high efficiency guy, but Jimmy Crackcorn, I don't care. I'm going with Braden Point here. I think just access to Kucherov on the power play, like, Point has put together two really nice seasons here. And this is the player he is, in my opinion. Like, 90 points this year, 95 last year. Even if he gets 80 next year, I still think that's nice value for Braden Point. He'll probably get 30 power play points. Yeah, and him and Kuch are going to have to do it all, right? And this guy plays a ton of minutes. So, yeah, give me some Braden Point there.
Yeah, hard to hate on Braden Point given what he's put together, given the synergy with Kucherov. Feels pretty locked in, feels like a floor pick, something I don't mind at this point in the draft, if you will. Goes there alongside Hyman and Rantanen, so first center, you don't have to worry about doubling up on center only or anything like that. Feels pretty strong. Yeah, this is next up for me is the 8-hole team. This is the team with Kaprizov and Bouchard from the first few picks here. I think I am going to add to this with Elias Pettersson. Yeah, I just feel like Pettersson, I think he got steamed up unnecessarily last year. Mm-hmm. I definitely didn't have him ranked nearly as highly as he was being drafted, and didn't have him anywhere as a result. And that ended up being the right call for this season. But definitely, if he's going to slip into the middle to back end of the third this season, then I'm definitely going to be interested in that. Shot production went right back to where it was. Shots per 60, going back to 2019, 2020, you got 7.71, 7.83, 7.74. You got 22, 23 at 9.38, and then this past season at 7.71 again. So it's pretty easy to spot the outlier in that scenario. Shot nearly the same shooting percentage all five of those years, so you feel pretty confident in the shooting percentage just being what it is. Overall, I feel like this is a bankable player at this point in the draft. You know what you're getting. I don't think he has the kind of elite-level ceiling that some were forecasting for him after that one really big season. His minutes took a step back this past season as well. If that comes back up, then I'd feel even better, obviously, about the pick. But even at this level, I skated 19:39 a night last year. Even at that level, I'm feeling pretty solid about Pettersson at the 308.
Yeah, absolutely, buddy. I think he's a little dinged up too, honestly. Like last little bit of the season into the playoffs, he's not playing the same. And I don't think it's confidence. It's just my gut take. But watch, I've watched the guy for, you know, a few years now, and you know, he's not really going on all cylinders. So I think there's probably a little bit of headroom there as well. All right. This team here is my Matthew Tkachuk, JT Miller team. It's the beef squad. Oh yeah, the prime rib roasts. All right, the Philly cheesesteaks. Oh God. Funny story. I actually, my friend of mine downloaded ChatGPT or whatever the heck, and we put in creamy beefers in there to make like an image. It was of the most disgusting things I've ever seen. Like, and then we put hockey in there. So it's like basically this piece of prime rib that has like cream dripping from it. He's got hockey gloves on and he's skating on the ice. I'm going to put that on my business card. I think that makes sense. The creamy beefers, and that's what I'm calling this team. But anyways, Matthew Tkachuk, JT Miller. I do want to go defense here, I think. And I got to go Adam Fox. I think that makes absolute sense. I love the goal production from Adam Fox this year. And he's just, again, super reliable. And in this format too, Adam Fox doesn't hit, but he blocks. And blocks are worth a 0.5 in this scoring format. So Adam Fox will definitely hold value here. And he has access to a top five power play in the league. That should be a top five power play again next season. So yeah, I feel good. This is a good floor play for me, I think. I love the access to the power play.
Yeah. Fox, obviously a reliable player. Hard to bet against that. The 12.4% shooting percentage this year, obviously a big part of the added goal production, and had the highest IPP of his career. But he is definitely one of those guys who can sustain the 50-plus IPP with relative ease from the blue line. Yeah, I mean, just looking quickly at his underlying numbers, really only the shooting percentage, and the shooting percentage definitely out of line. The IPP, maybe a touch high. Not going to ding him too much for that. But overall, I think Adam Fox, probably a fourth round guy for me, but definitely like well within the range of the guys we're talking about here. For myself here, I've got the Jack Hughes, Brady Tkachuk team, Tkachuk team here. And this is an interesting spot. Like you've been talking about defense, I would like to go defense here. I don't know that there's a guy that I like feel 100% confident in taking here. But just based on the fact that I don't think that this team is going to move away from the coaching situation, I think that Noah Dobson is probably the guy here. Had a really, obviously, a terrific season. The Islanders going to the playoffs makes me feel like the coaching is cure. 24.5 minutes average time on ice that previous season, down at 20:22. Going back to our preseason projections, Blake, we did talk about this, that really the only thing standing in the way of Dobson and some really significant fantasy production was the time on ice. He got all that and then some this year, and he absolutely crushed in terms of the point production. So that feels good. He has been a high IPP guy. Like, honestly, his numbers compare really favorably with a lot of other elite defensemen. He actually lowered his shots per 60, probably just a factor from him playing so many minutes this year, playing way more than he had been asked to play previously. So that kind of lowered his shots per 60, 6.6, 7.8, and now 5.4 this past year. But the overall volume, just by virtue of the fact that he's playing an extra 4 minutes a night, definitely he got there on volume. I think that Noah Dobson is pretty safe in this range as long as the coach is back, the same coach that played him 24 and a half last year, going to play him probably somewhere around that this year, and they're going to continue to rely on Noah Dobson to be that guy. And so I feel pretty good with Jack Hughes, Brady Tkachuk, and Noah Dobson on Team 10 here.
Nice. Yeah, I'm not sure where I'm at with Dobson at this point. I mean, I still love the player, but I'm a little bit more concerned with Patrick Waugh there. Like, this guy, he's on power play two right now in the playoffs for some reason. Like, why, you know, maybe still with the injury, like, I don't know. But, like, he didn't exactly show out with Patrick Waugh as the coach. And I'm wondering if there's just some getting to know you kind of stuff happening with Dobson there. So, but, I mean, great player. 70 points. That's amazing. Like, he smashed our expectations. Big minutes. So, hopefully that continues. I think it's a slam dunk if he gets those minutes again. Okay. This is my team at the 11th spot. Cale Makar, Artemi Panarin. So I like where I'm at already. And yeah, it's getting weird. Like, in the third round, I want to have, like, you know, proven studs, but they're not as easy to come by here. So I think I love this player, and I'm just going to go for it for the stack here. I want Val Nichushkin, Machine Gun Valley. Give me him with Cale Makar and Artemi Panarin. I'll get the Makar Nichushkin stack. I just think, like, there's nothing really holding this guy back besides himself, right? And hopefully, like, you know, he's come out of the player assistance program. He looks good, got a hat trick today. That he's prioritized on this team. He's a staple on the power play. He's an amazing power play performer. Like, I could see him, maybe not the season that Sam Reinhardt had, but I could see him having a season like that. He's that kind of player on the power play. He's a game breaker, and he has amazing players to play with. And I think he's going to get the 18 to 20 minute treatment this year. Whereas at the beginning of last year, he was minimized. He was on the third line, power play two at times, and he was dropped in a lot of spots. Well, I don't think that's going to happen again this year. Even if Landeskog is back, I could see Landeskog moving down the line, not Nichushkin. So yeah, I feel good about that pick.
All right. All right, we've come to the last pick of this way too early 2024-25 mock draft. This is a team with Forsberg and Josi. I am going to go for broke on this one. I just feel like we can't leave the first three rounds without this player being taken. He's absolutely going to get taken in the first three rounds of every draft next year. It's Connor Bedard.
Nice.
Me here. Yeah, basically a historic level rookie season for Bedard. Skated nearly 20 minutes a night, which was not something I was necessarily anticipating for him. Absolutely dreadful conditions, possibly the worst the first overall pick has ever walked into.
Yeah.
78% IPP, absolutely carried that team. 9.2 shots per 60, had over 10 individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. Honestly, tremendous stuff. I can't believe what he was able to do with absolutely nothing there. So hats off to Connor Bedard for his season. Scored 61 points in 68 games. The Chicago Blackhawks have the third most cap space moving into next year.
Yeah, you got to do something.
They tried to get Taylor Hall to whatever level of credit you want to give them for that. Obviously, that didn't work out with the Hall injury, but I feel like they'll try probably a couple of things along those lines. The kids are another year older, so you'll probably hopefully have some more support from the kids coming up the system for Chicago. And then, yeah, I do think that they're going to be suitors for a really strong player to play on the top line alongside Bedard this offseason. And I do think he's going to get vaulted up, and rightfully so because of that. I think you see honestly, you probably see like a, for most players, you see like a 3-4 year linear progression in the NHL, players who are going to be fantasy relevant. For a guy like Bedard, for a guy like, you know, Matthews, for a guy like McDavid, you see a rookie year where they have a great year, but it's not absolutely elite. And then it's the second year where they really take off and establish themselves at the top end of the game. I really think that it kind of depends on what Chicago can actually provide him, because no matter how great you are, you do need players around you. But if Bedard can get a couple of halfway decent line mates to bounce pucks off of, then I do think he can absolutely outperform this 312 pick. And I think he's probably going to go in the second round in a lot of leagues, with people just continuing to hype this man up, and for good reason. He's an absolute stud. So that's my take on Connor Bedard. I did want to ask you, Blake, were there any players that you thought should have gotten drafted in the third round, or like honorable mentions, that kind of thing? Were there any players that were like, man, I think we should have found a way to squeeze them in here somewhere? It feels a little bit weird that they're going in the fourth.
Yeah. I mean, Sebastian Aho, like that. Sure. I mean, center only, he always drops basically because of that. But I mean, mm-hmm. he's very steady in Carolina. I mean, Jesper Bratt was a guy I was looking at as well. I think he has some headroom there for like a 90 point season. I like Jesper Bratt there. You know, Matt Boldy is another one, like, we're obviously high on, like, you know, fourth round Boldy seems about right to me, but I think he might provide third round value if he does what we think he might do. And then, yeah, there's, I mean, where does Wyatt Johnson go for you? Cause like, I love that he's on here, and it's just a hot topic. Like, you know, I'm sure we won't really talk about him that much in the off season. And then once draft season happens, we'll see where his ADP is and everything, but well, where do you think he's going to land?
That's a really good question. I don't think he's going to get steamed up as much as he probably should. I do think that I'm going to have a fair bit of Wyatt Johnson next year. I mean, if Dallas goes on a deep run here and Wyatt Johnson is a big part of that and, you know, leads the team in scoring in the playoffs or something, then sure, he's probably going to get some steam for that. But
Hintz got third round this last year, and yeah, we saw what happened there. So
yeah, and I feel like it could be a similar story for Johnson for sure. Otherwise, if Dallas gets beat by Vegas here in the first round, then you could be looking at a situation where Johnson might be a little bit undervalued still. I don't think he's a player that I want to take super early as like a foundational piece of my team. Right. He's more of a player, think about where Matt Boldy was drafted last year, right?
Around 80 to 100-ish.
Yeah, somewhere in that range where you're taking him and hoping for that breakout and honestly getting it for the most part. I mean, yeah, everything looking really good for me for Wyatt Johnson, 20th in the league in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. You know, that's without the power play time that a lot of these guys, that's without access to all the top end players for most of the season that a lot of these other guys had that are above him on this list. So Wyatt Johnson, absolutely elite level chance production. Yeah, honestly, a pretty similar player in a lot of respects to Matt Boldy in my mind. Matt Boldy vaulted up this year to 6th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 amongst all players. I feel like that's something that's still flying under the radar a little bit. Shot only 12.8%, and I feel like he should probably be shooting a lot higher. So, yeah, Matt Boldy and Wyatt Johnson, both interesting players and similar in some regards. I feel like, yeah, if I can get Johnson in that 80 to 100 range where Boldy was going this past year, I'm going to be really happy about that as a kind of an upside pick once I've got my core set. If he does go on a big run here in the playoffs and he gets vaulted up into a higher range, then I'm not going to be so excited to have him as a bit more of a speculative. He has to perform at this level. He has to get the top line deployment. He has to get the top power play deployment for this to really hit. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with him. I do think Boldy is one that I'd mention. I think, honestly, Ovechkin is a guy I'd mention. I don't think he's done. Yeah, he had a decline, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least to see him bounce back a little bit, even just in the shooting percentage end of things. I think Washington could add some pieces to make that offense a little bit better this offseason, make that power play a little bit better. It was shocking how bad that power play was, to be quite honest with you. I think they invest a lot of resources, maybe not even in terms of players, but just in terms of coaching to get that right this year. And Ovechkin should benefit and bounce back as a result of that. He's obviously getting to the end of his career here, but I don't think he's done quite yet. Kyle Connor, I think, is one other player that absolutely deserves some attention. Yeah, just a guy that I think absolutely elite level shooter, gets a ton of minutes, and yeah, he should absolutely be in this range. Maybe this is the right range. Early part of the fourth is where he should go, but definitely he's an honorable mention in that regard. Anybody amongst the defensemen, Blake, that's really sticking out to you? Like, I know we talked about it kind of in passing here that it feels like it's a bit messy here. But yeah, you got guys like, I feel like a lot of people would say Miro Heiskanen, you got Victor Hedman, Zach Werenski's up in this range. Mackenzie Weegar had an unbelievable season. Would you take the swing on him in the fourth round, or does that feel too iffy? Where are you at with these defensemen? Is there anybody that kind of pops out of that group for you?
Yeah, it felt like there was more options last year, or better options, where we felt good about it. Where this year, it's like, I'm not sure. Like, Mackenzie Weegar, no. I do think that this is a player who's definitely taken a step in, you know, in his role on the team. So I feel like his role is a bit safer. But 20 goal Mackenzie Weegar, no, that's not happening again, right? And he doesn't get power play time, and he got a little bit this year, but I wouldn't count on that. So definitely no on him. I am interested in Dougie Hamilton. Like I was saying, you know, we got a new coach in there. Put Dougie Hamilton back on the power play. It doesn't make sense, right? I mean, obviously this year was a wash, but this is a 20 goal player as well, but he gets power play time. And one thing about Dougie Hamilton, his ice time historically has never been that good. He's like a 21 minute man. So I don't know. It's woulda, coulda, shoulda, if with Dougie Hamilton. But I mean, I would definitely like to take a swing at Dougie Hamilton, not in the first three rounds, but that's a guy that I think has amazing upside, like 70 point upside, right? But he's going to need power play one, and he's going to need like 21 to 25 minutes. So hopefully the new coach there, if it is Travis Green, like I could see him going with Dougie Hamilton. Why would they put Luke Hughes back there? It doesn't make any sense. But I do like Werenski. I like Hamilton, and I like Mike Matheson. I'm still big on him. He's amazing. This guy's one of the best skating defensemen around. He looks amazing. And that team, like, is it weird to you to see like Nick Suzuki, like, what a season he had. Like, he just did it. He just did it somehow this season, like against, like, metrics be damned. Nick Suzuki was just out there doing stuff. So that power play is good. I mean, not good, but those players together, like Caulfield, Suzuki, Slafkovsky obviously took a step this year. So I do like Mike Matheson, but you can get him way later. You can still get Mike Matheson much later. So I don't know. Out of those guys, there's none that I'm really liking in round three. That's for sure.
Yeah, hard to put anybody up into round three. Hamilton will be an interesting conversation. I feel like he's going to end up in a spot where if he gets power play one all season, you're going to be stoked. And if he doesn't, you're going to be really angry.
Yeah. Ugly.
And for that reason, I'm probably not going to have him, just because I am valuing that floor earlier on.
Yeah.
We'll see where he ends up in ADP. If everybody's just all aboard the Luke Hughes train and Dougie Hamilton's going in like the seventh round, then absolutely. I think he can provide tons of value, even if he's not on the top power play. Look at what Chris Letang did for Pittsburgh, not on the top power play for most of the season. Definitely think Dougie Hamilton could provide similar value. I mean, Jersey's got a stacked offense. You can say what you want about the results this year in terms of not making the playoffs, but definitely think there's going to be points to go around for all their players next year, and Hamilton should be a beneficiary. Yeah, you know, I can't pass up the opportunity to speak of Zach Werenski here.
Yeah,
just a terrific season, flying under the radar. I've been trying to pump his tires just to get him some recognition out there. I don't know what more I can say about Zach Werenski that I haven't already said on this podcast, but if and when Columbus ever gets some halfway decent coaching, some halfway decent management, and some halfway decent players around him, I think Zach Werenski could be a guy who leads all defensemen in scoring one year. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. It would be really interesting to see what Werenski could do in place of Bouchard in Edmonton, or in place of Fox on the Rangers, or in place of Makar on the Avalanche. I think you'd be looking at a pretty special point total for him. I don't know if he's quite at the level of those players, but I do think that he's a lot closer to them than anyone gives them credit for. So can't miss the chance to pump up Zach Werenski one last time, but I do think that's going to be all we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value, helped you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which I don't know if you've heard, Blake, it's a terrific free resource.
Oh my
Many
goodness.
Thanks to the band. They're there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. That's it, folks. Much love.